Suns, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. We've led off the show in recent days with European soccer news, and today is no different, as the big story in the world of football comes out of the capital city of Spain. That's Madrid. If you haven't already heard, Zinedine Zidane is stepping down as the manager of Real Madrid just days after winning his third straight UEFA Champions League title. Zidane made his name 20 years ago as a star for the World Cup-winning French national team and as a club player with Real. In a press conference in Madrid, Zidane said he thinks it's time for the players to experience a new leader and a new style of play. Florentino Perez, the club president, said it was an unexpected decision, and he is standing by him. Zidane told reporters, "This team needs to continue winning, and they need a change. After 3 years, they need different ideas, different ways of working, and that is why I took this decision. I love this club dearly, and I want to thank the president for the opportunity that he gave me to come and play at this club, this great club. I will remain grateful for the rest of my life. Now, however, it's time for a change, for me and everyone, and that is why I have taken the decision not to continue as Real Madrid coach next year." Perez said he will respect the manager's decision, even though he would have loved for him to stay forever. "The only thing we can do is accept and respect the decision," the president said. Zidane said he would meet with some of the players to explain his decision, which he said was inspired by some challenging moments during the season that just ended, in spite of winning the major championship. He also said he's not planning to become the manager of another team, nor is he currently looking for a new opportunity. Zidane took over Real Madrid in early 2016 and led the squad to a Champions League title later that spring against crosstown rival Atletico Madrid. Last year, Real defeated Juventus of Italy and just days ago, Liverpool. He only won one La Liga title, and that came last year. Now let's take a look at some of the special challenges coming up in June for African journalists preparing to cover the World Cup in Russia. Gianni Merlo spoke with reporter Iron Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt, Nigeria. Merlo stressed the need for good planning by African journalists in order to cut down on expenses in Russia.
The big problem is the financial problem, because especially as it happened now in Russia, you have to travel a lot. The good thing is that the organizer has provided free train ticket to go from a big city to another big city. Sometimes you have to travel all night long. You have to travel near 20 hours sometimes. But this is a way in which people can save a lot of money, because if not, it's very difficult, because the cost in Russia is quite high. But the journalists that are working together to find solution, they can find not so expensive to rent apartment all together instead to go in the hotel.
When the journalists give, there are five countries representing Africa. What kind of stories are we expecting from them to represent the interests and views of Africa?
You know, there are different kind of teams also. There is the northern part of Africa, there is the central part of Africa. So there is a different kind of attitude of different kind of journalism also. But I think that the basic problem are the same for everybody. There is no difference between an African journalist or an European journalist when you follow the World Cup. The problem is financial for everybody, and the best solution is to study very carefully how to plan your trip, how to plan everything. Many years ago was different. Now you have to plan completely everything. Everything, because if you don't plan, it is impossible for you to survive for 1 month in a big country as Russia. Because next time, after we, when you will go in Qatar, will be much easier. Because all the transportation are local only, no? And so will be different, and after there will be a lot of apartments that can be rented, and perhaps many colleagues, they can live together, they can share. Different will be in another way. For example, if in 2026 will be the United States, Canada, and Mexico, that would be another problem, because there you cannot go by train. You have to fly, and the flight, the costs are quite high. I don't know if it's possible sometimes to make agreement with the airlines, because already the airlines now, they have a low cost, no? And they cannot make a discount on the low cost. So I think that we have to study something new.
Talking about AIPS and Africa chapter, are you impressed with what has, you know, the achievements so far and the presence in Africa?
Yes, I must say that what I have noticed during my president period, because now I'm president since 2005, so I've had the possibility to see how is growing the sport journalism in Africa. It's much better than 10 years ago, and it's growing, it's completely opening new frontier. For example, also in our office, there is an African girl that is working with us. So it means that the possibilities are the same now. The problem is that are always financial, and always also sometimes of you need to upgrade some knowledge with the possibility to open some school, so you can discuss about the context of the new journalism. This is very important, but I have found Africa very open.
Do you have suggestions or ideas on how African journalists should do the work covering sports in the continent?
But I think that the most important thing is that what they have to do, they have to invest in culture, in general culture. Because a good journalist is the one that has a wide range of culture that can understand the world. And after to study the sport deeply, not to go only on Wikipedia or to look on Google and to search for this. People have to have different kind of experience. They have to understand that they have to speak with the people, they have to confront the opinion, and not to take only what they found on internet.
That's Gianni Merlo, the president of the International Sports Press Association. And he was talking with reporter Iron Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt, Nigeria. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Joining us now with an update on the French Open tennis tournament is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. In French Open tennis action, Serbia's Novak Djokovic advanced to the third round on Wednesday, defeating Jaume Munar of Spain 7-6, 6-4, 6-4. Despite winning in straight sets, Djoko seemed to struggle a bit, but after Wednesday's match, he was quick to put his challenges into greater context.
I think it's all a personal perspective, how you perceive things in life. I mean, it can be really tough and it can be really easy. I mean, everything starts and ends with us in our minds. So, I mean, to sit here and talk about how tough it is and you have, people starving to death. I mean, this is, for me, it's not a, there's no point in talking about that. I mean, it's just the way it is. As an athlete, I have to face these challenges, I would call them, and if I overcome them or not, it's just a matter of work that I've put into, luck at times, and circumstances that I'm in, and that's it.
In 2016, Djokovic defeated American Andy Murray to claim his first ever French Open title. He is one of eight players to achieve the career Grand Slam and the only player in tennis history to hold all four Grand Slams on three different surfaces at once. On Wednesday, Djoko acknowledged he hasn't entered this year's French Open in top form, but he believes the work he's putting in will make a difference in the long run.
I do feel like evolving is something that is natural. It's a natural process of every human being and our planet. So I try to, strive and to evolve and to get better as a person as a player as well. I mean, it is what it is at the moment. I'm not playing at the level that I wish to, but at the same time, I understand that it is the process that obviously takes time, and I'm trying to not give up and create the best out of this situation and circumstances that I'm in.
Well, we'll see if Djokovic can tighten things up in his match against Roberto Bautista Agut of Spain. That match will be played on Friday. Tomorrow, I'll have results from Thursday's matchup between Spain's Rafael Nadal and Guido Pella of Argentina. Rafa going for his 11th French Open title. And on the women's side, I'll tell you about Thursday's match between American Serena Williams and Australia's Ashley Barty. And I'm keeping my eye on American Sloane Stephens. She'll play in an early match against Camila Giorgi of Italy on Friday, so stay tuned. And I can't leave without turning to the World Cup. Do you realize kickoff is in 2 weeks? 14, the number of days left until the start of the World Cup. 14 is also the number of cities in Spain that played host to the 1982 World Cup. The games were held that year in 17 stadiums. 14 cities, 17 stadiums, that remains a record for a single nation World Cup. And if you compare that to the first ever World Cup held in Uruguay in 1930, the matches were then played in just 3 stadiums, all of them in Montevideo. This year, Russia hosts the games in 12 stadiums across 11 cities. 6 of those stadiums were built specifically for the World Cup. The other 6 were either rebuilt or renovated for the ultimate fan experience. This year's 2018 FIFA World Cup kicks off in 2 weeks on June 14th. That's all for now. Back over to you, Dan.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. As Gwen noted, we'll soon be saying this month instead of next month for the World Cup in Russia. Seems like just yesterday, Germany won the title. We're joined now by Nick Friedel. He covers the NBA for ESPN. They've been playing since late October, and now finally we know who's going to be in the NBA Finals. Game 1 tonight in Oakland, California. It's the Golden State Warriors hosting the Cleveland Cavaliers for the 4th season in a row. As you know, Steph Curry and the Warriors have won 2 of the last 3 finals, with the Cavs finally breaking the city's drought of major championships by winning it all in an epic Game 7 in 2016. Many people wondered if we'd see these two teams in the finals again, but they each managed to make it through tough 7-game conference finals against Houston and Boston. Nick also just happens to be my cousin. How's it going, Nick?
It's good, buddy. It's good to be with you.
Nick, you've been covering the NBA since LeBron was a fairly young player in the league. Now he's an old man. We've all seen his tired eyes and his bald spot. And a lot of people wondered if he was going to be able to bring this Cavaliers team into the finals once again. What do you think about his accomplishment of bringing the Cavs this far?
I think this is the best accomplishment he's had to date, Dan. I mean, I know everybody looks at that finals win from a couple years ago that you mentioned, and that was unbelievable to deliver Cleveland in that moment. But this team, this Cavs team, compared to the teams he's been on certainly in the last 7-8 years here, as he's been on this run of being in the finals, just not very good. It shows how weak the Eastern Conference is right now on the whole. So no matter what happens here over the next couple weeks in the finals, LeBron should be truly celebrated for what he's already been able to accomplish in lifting this group to this level.
You know, just a week or so ago, I was talking with Sonny about how I thought the Cavs were done, that Boston's coach was too good and their depth was more than what the Cavs had to match up. And, you know, the Cavs had played a tough series with the Indiana Pacers early that kind of showed some of their deficiencies, and they gutted it out. I mean, the Cavs managing to make it to the finals gave a lot of my friends and family back home in Cleveland quite a good amount of pleasure. Can I put you on the spot here, though? Are we going to see LeBron back in Cleveland next fall?
I still think yes. I think he signs for at least one more year, Dan, because this is the best path for him to get back to the finals. You know, people say, oh, well, Boston is on the rise, and with Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward coming back, they're the team to beat. Okay, and I'm with you. I think Brad Stevens, the coach, is fantastic. Having said that, it's like people just assume that Cleveland will stay the same no matter what happens after the season. If LeBron says to Dan Gilbert, the Cavs owner, and Kobe Altman, the GM, that he'll come back for one more year, they're going to rearrange that roster so that they can load up one more time and try to get back to this level again and try to win another title. So I think, to me right now, before the finals begin, the safe bet is actually on LeBron staying in Cleveland one more year because it's the easiest path for him given the other alternatives.
Well, that's good to hear. My mom and some of our friends, we were all watching the game together in Cleveland last Sunday night, and everybody was anxious going into the halftime and really thrilled to see the Cavs get at least a couple more games with LeBron back home in Cleveland. And now, if he's back for another year, 80-plus games and the playoffs, I think everybody will be thrilled with that. Let's move on to what we're going to see tonight in Oakland. Obviously, it's the fourth season in a row that these two teams have matched up in the finals. But I want to know from you, how will these finals be different from the last three?
It's a good question. I really don't think it's going to look that much different than it did last season, Dan, because Golden State is playing with the confidence of knowing they just won a Game 7 in Houston without Andre Iguodala, who is still going to be out tonight. His status remains unknown for the rest of the series. And they know they've already knocked this team off many times. I mean, had Draymond Green not gotten suspended for Game 5 a couple years ago, you could make the argument that Cleveland never would have won that series, never would have won the finals. So Golden State knows how talented they are. I expect them to be completely locked in, knowing that they're playing for history. And as we discussed, I mean, I just don't think this Cleveland group is that good. I mean, LeBron has been unbelievable playing at such a high level in his 15th year, but the rest of that roster consistently can't give you any kind of solid points, rebounds each night. You're not sure which guy is going to show up, and sometimes several guys aren't there to carry their own weight. So I think it's going to be fast. I totally expect Golden State to win, and I would be stunned if this thing got to a Game 6 or a Game 7 at this point.
So you're giving the Cavs a chance to win one of the games, probably a home game, right?
That's right. Game 3 is looking pretty solid. If it doesn't happen in Game 3, it could be all she wrote.
I mean, we've talked about the Cavs winning the championship 2 years ago. I know that you're a Chicago Cubs fan, and you were celebrating seeing the Cubs break their drought of not having won the World Series. What's the difference between, you know, getting to the finals, getting deep into the playoffs, and coming up short a couple of years and just winning one time? I mean, how much of a difference is it from 0-1 versus, say, 1-2, which the Cavs are trying to do here? I mean, in your experience as a sports fan and somebody that covers sports, that first championship is so meaningful. What do you think the difference is just getting that one championship that you can, you know, put up on the mantle and enjoy forever?
Yeah, I mean, Dan, it makes all the difference in the world. Because if you're a team like the Cubs or like the Cavs were a couple years ago that hasn't gotten to that point in so very long, that's the one that everyone will always remember. Because the issue for not just fans but for these pro teams, you can get to the precipice of greatness. I mean, you can get to these final series or the final game, if we're talking about football and the Super Bowl. But if you don't win, it just kind of fades away over time. I mean, you look at the Buffalo Bills, people remember those teams. What do they remember most? That they never won. So to get to that point where everything comes together and you find a way to make it happen, those are the ones that really live forever. So I know LeBron and his teammates desperately want to win this series. It's so rare to be able to have these opportunities where you can earn a championship or earn another ring. But there is no question, as far as everything lines up in any professional sport, the difference between 0 to 1 and 1 to however many else you get to, it's really no comparison, because that first one is always the sweetest when you talk to players and coaches and myself as a Cubs fan. No matter how many times the Cubs win, I know I'll always remember that first one a couple years ago.
And those are the kinds of moments that'll be burned into your memory for the rest of your life. Seeing, you know, Kyrie Irving hit the game-winning shot and LeBron make that incredible block from behind. And certainly for you, seeing, you know, Chris Bryant throw the ball over to first base to clinch the World Series for the Cubs a couple of falls ago. I was listening to some sound from the press conferences the other day, and Steph Curry and LeBron both seemed pretty grateful to see the chance to get back to the finals again. Both teams made it through a 7-game series in their conference finals. I mean, how much, you know, these teams have now made it 4 times in a row, but how much do you think they really value the chance to get back to the finals?
I think they value it immensely. And Dan, they know how these leagues are built. I mean, these leagues are built so that teams like the Warriors, teams like the Cavs, they don't get on these runs anymore. I mean, the league would love nothing more than to see a little more parity than we've seen to this point. So I think, especially Steph Curry, who grew up in a basketball family, his dad, Dell, played in the league for a long, long time, and LeBron, who's on his way to the Hall of Fame in his 15th year, they understand how difficult it is to get to this moment and to be able to do it time and time again, and in LeBron's case, go to 8 finals in a in a row. I mean, it's unbelievable the consistency that has transpired here, and they should be praised, and everything coming their way they deserve. But I think they each understand how unbelievable it is for both of them to go against one another, and when you have the league's best team, best dynasty since the Michael Jordan Bulls in Golden State, and you have the league's best player in LeBron, I mean, those are times to cherish both as players and as fans, even though I know that there are a lot of fans out there kind of tired of seeing the same two teams in the end.
Yeah, what do you think the perception is? You've got people who are thinking, we've seen this all before, but if you had to give it kind of a scale of a percentage, which percentage is it? 60-40 that would like to see a different combination? Is it 70-30? What do you think about the fans' perception of seeing these two teams once again in the final?
I'd say it's 50-50, Dan. I mean, I hear from a lot of fans, whether it's social media or just talking to them on the street, and I think a lot of people are kind of tired of the same. And Kevin Durant has changed everything around in the last couple years because he's added a different element to the series. But the reality is that, you know, the basketball junkies are into seeing LeBron as the man go up against the best team we've seen in a long time. So there's always going to be a faction of fans that are that are excited to see it one more time. Wouldn't mind seeing it next year.
Thanks, Nick. We got to wrap it up. I appreciate your help. This is the May 31st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
May marks the 15th anniversary of one of the United States' most important and successful initiatives, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, universally known as PEPFAR. First proposed by then-President George W. Bush in January 2003, the initiative has since invested over $80 billion to address HIV/AIDS worldwide and transform the lives of millions of people around the globe. The idea was to fight the HIV/AIDS epidemic in the hardest-hit regions of the developing world. The initiative's first 15 focus countries were Botswana, Côte d'Ivoire, Ethiopia, Guyana, Haiti, Kenya, Mozambique, Namibia, Nigeria, Rwanda, South Africa, Tanzania, Uganda, Vietnam, and Zambia. In the initial 5 years, the program aimed to support treatment for 2 million people, prevent 7 million new infections, and care for 10 million people infected or affected by HIV/AIDS. These were stunning goals at a time when fewer than 50,000 Africans had access to HIV/AIDS treatment. 15 years and 2 5-year expansions of the program later, PEPFAR supports HIV/AIDS treatment for 14 million men, women, and children in over 50 countries. That's twice as many people as we had just 4.5 years ago, said U.S. Global AIDS Coordinator and U.S. Special Representative for Global Health Diplomacy Deborah Birx at a recent press conference. Through our work with the countries and partners, we've dramatically increased the effectiveness of the program. Ambassador Birx added that in addition to saving some 14 million lives, the program has also prevented HIV infection in over 2.2 million babies and cares for 6.4 million orphans, vulnerable children, and their caregivers. We're seeing amazing progress where we really believe that we can achieve our goal of a minimum of 10 countries really getting the epidemic under control in the next 3 years, said Ambassador Birx. This will be an important roadmap for the rest of the world to encourage all of us that we can actually control a pandemic without a vaccine or a cure.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast comes to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.